Florida law. Ask an attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Ask Florida law attorney. With attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open early this Saturday morning. And if you have a legal question, all you have to do is to call our toll-free number. So you have the your question can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, health care surrogates, living wills, traffic law, family law, Medicaid law, can be just about any area of law. If I know the answer, I'll be glad to share it with you, and we can discuss it. And if I don't know the answer, I will at least be able to give you some direction, and I can always find another attorney that we can refer you to. Had multiple other attorneys on the shows during the years, and they've a lot of them have had different practice areas than what I practice in. So you kind of learn from them as you answer questions and hear their answers and so forth. So, hey, don't be shy. If you have a problem, you have something you're worried about, something maybe that kept you awake during the night, and you want to discuss it with someone, hey, it doesn't even have to be a legal problem. You just have a problem. I'd love to help you. And there's nothing expected in return, by the way. This is a 52-minute straight run, no commercial show. If you have a legal question, 877-943-9673. That's 877. Phone lines are open right now at 877-943-9673. And phone lines are open. If you have a legal question, give us a call. Always like that first caller to come in and get the show started with questions. I could easily sit here in this chair and talk for 52 minutes, but that doesn't – I'd like to talk to the audience. You know, I was – been doing this since 1984. I think it's the longest running show in Florida. And I was brought up kind of in talk radio when talk really meant talking to people and on air and getting two-way conversation going on air. And there's so many shows that don't receive live callers. I call them the talking head shows. And that to me, that's not talk radio. That's like a big infomercial where you are just talking and trying to sell your product, basically. Anyway, so you're listening to a live show again this Saturday morning. It's right at the end of June, June 29th. And if you have a legal question, the name of the show is Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law, a live call-in show. And if you'd like to call in, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Let's go to Kirk, our first caller in Seminole, Florida. Hey, Kirk.
Good morning, sir. A couple of quick questions about a trust.
All right.
We are, obviously, my father has passed, and we are a family of six siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And two of the siblings are from his first marriage. And they are the trustees. And what I'm curious to know is they have a fiduciary responsibility to us to, obviously provide an accounting of the trust and the trust account.
Yeah, you're entitled to a full copy of the trust, all the amendments, and a full accounting of all the assets. And they have that requirement. If they're not doing that requirement, you can, have... And you can't make them do it yourself. Just get an attorney to write a letter. The attorney will quote the statute and give them a deadline on when to provide that for you.
Okay. And one last question. Let's say that there are several different things that need to happen. Obviously, dissolution of the company, the capital gains taxes, which all have to be done by an accountant by them. And what I'm curious to know is, what is there a time frame or a time period that it has an ending for them to complete the requested by my
Well, the statutes just say reasonable time. So there's no set, you know, 6 month, 1 year. There's no set schedule of when it has to be done. Right. So the statutes basically just say a reasonable amount of time.
Okay.
So it'd be up to you and your attorney to decide if they've, you know, the attorney would usually push for it. You know, and so when you're pushing for it, that accelerates it most of the time. And if you just sit back and wait for a reasonable time, then the reasonable time might not be reasonable to you, might be reasonable to the person being the trustee.
Right.
But if you got someone pushing for it and kind of demanding it, then most of the time I would say that accelerates when you get it.
Okay. Now let's say we, as the non-trustees, requested an accounting of the trust.
Yes, that's
what
who.
Is,
yeah.
What is the expectation or the law? How does it say how much time they have to?
Well, it just says reasonable time. Now I can tell you, I do lots of this, so I can tell you that I think a reasonable time would be within 3 months or less
from the request of the accounting.
Well, from the date of the death. I mean, the personal representative and trustee of an estate is a job. So yeah. Your job is to collect the assets, pay the bills, deal with creditors, and make distribution. I mean, that's as simple as it's a lot more involved in that. But basically, 3 months is usually plenty of time to collect the assets and get an inventory going. In fact, if you're doing a probate, if you're not, let's just shift it to a will and you die, and there's requirements of the personal representative of the will, the court gives them 90 days. So I think it's reasonable to compare what the court would give you on an estate as opposed to what is reasonable for a trustee to act.
Okay. So basically, our case is a little different. We had to sell a property, and the funds are supposed to go into the trust.
Yeah, but the reason of the inventory would just say would give the appraised value.
Right.
You don't have to sell it to get the value. It's just the inventory is what the appraised value would be.
Okay. So basically, 3 months is a reasonable time to get
well,
an account.
Yeah, in most cases. Every case is a little bit different. Sometimes it's hard to track down companies or get companies to respond about whether there even is an account. You know, you find an old statement, you want to know if there's still an account. But they should be able to at least, most people should at least be able to give a partial inventory after 3 months, if not a complete one.
Okay, knowing that could change with, tax payments and expense payments. And that
right.
Thing. Okay, that's what I needed to know.
All right.
I really appreciate your help.
Yeah, if you have further questions, I'll be glad to help. Thanks.
Okay, take care.
All right, if you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number. Toll-free number for you to call the show is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Let's go to Rena in Jacksonville.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, and I'm calling about a rental dispute. I moved out as I gave my former landlord, proper notice, and he has refused to give me back my security deposit or my final inspection.
How much is the deposit?
$545.
How much?
$545.
Okay. Did he give you a reason for withholding it?
Oh, he claims that the apartment, the place was dirty, but his wife, she had already came and did a walkthrough. We were good. She just asked me to do something with the stove, and I did it. Everything was fine. And I know he was just being nasty because I definitely wanted my deposit back because I was moving into a new home. And he even referenced that. I'm like, I definitely want my money back because I need it. So now I left the place. I leave all my places, and I've gotten all my security deposits back. My whole entire history of renting.
Well, here's your situation. I mean, you could go hire an attorney to write a demand letter, but you're going to spend a couple hundred dollars probably for an attorney to write a letter. What I usually tell people in this type of case is to go to the courthouse, to the small claims court, get a form. They'll give you a form. You tell them your circumstance. They have a form you can fill out. You can file your own petition in small claims court. Now, what I usually tell people is to go get that form and then fill it out and don't file it yet and send a copy of it. Look, and you say, "Dear landlord, you owe me $545. We had a successful walkthrough. The place was not dirty as you claimed. You know, you put down your reasons. I'm going to go to small claims court. I've already been to the court and gotten the form. I really don't want to do this. And if you pay me my money back as you should within, 10 days, great. That's what you should do. And if you don't do, I'm going to file this paper and see you in court."
Gotcha.
That's what I would do.
Sounds good. I love it. That's what I will definitely do, because I was going to go that way. But I also thought about leaning that way as well, sending him a letter first. Should I put it certified?
Yeah, send it certified.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I'm going to continue to listen.
All right. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney, host of Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law for 34 years in county, 35 years actually now. And if you have a legal question, I'd be more than glad to try to help you. 877 is your toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Let's go to Marge in Sun City Center. Hey, Marge.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a problem with a bank. I have a trust. I have some stock in the trust and my home. I was trying to do a payable on death form to make it easier for my children to deal with the stock. And it was okay with CompuShare, who handles the stock. And they sent me the forms. I filled them out, and of course they wanted a medallion seal on it. I took it to my bank, which I've had for over 20 years, and they wouldn't, of course I had to take proof that the stock was mine. They would not give me a medallion seal until I brought in the whole trust, and they would copy it, I assume, and send it away to their attorneys to get the okay before they would do the stamp. Is that appropriate?
Well, most banks, that's what they're, if you deal with that bank, they have their own rules, and basically that's what most banks would do. But let me ask you a question here. When you have a living trust, you don't need a paid-on-death account. You want to get the account inside the trust, and the trust has the name beneficiary, so you don't have both. You either have a trust that has a named beneficiary and have the account inside the trust, or you do an account outside the trust with a paid-on-death beneficiary.
Okay, so that would be like double-dipping.
Yeah, there's no reason for that. So if you have your account already in the trust, you don't need a paid-on-death account. The trust has the beneficiary.
Okay, one other question. I would like to revoke the trust entirely.
Okay. Well, then you would need a paid-on-death account.
Okay.
All right, now, I think this is going to be a great conversation for our listeners because, I'm haven't talked to you about this, and I don't know the answer to the question I'm about to ask you, and most attorneys would like to know the answer before they ask a question, and we're on live radio. So my question to you, and for the benefit of the audience, because I think they would need to hear this conversation, is why do you want to revoke your trust?
Well, all my children are down as trustees upon my death. They live in four different states. I think it would be easier if it was just in a simple will with all four as trustees. I trust them. They're wonderful children.
Well, they're not trustees in a will. They're personal representatives,
Personal representatives would be about the same.
Do you have real estate? Do you have a home?
Yes.
And is your home in your trust now? So if you revoke your trust, you're going to have to deed the property out of the trust back to yourself, and then when you die, it goes through probate.
It would go through probate.
Yeah.
So part of the trust is the fact that it doesn't have to go through probate.
Well, that's why most people, there are many reasons to create a trust, but the main one is to avoid probate.
Okay.
Now, you can change your trustees. I mean, if you got all four kids, whatever you have as all co-trustees, you can have one primary and one backup, and their job is to distribute according to your benefit. And if you have a trust and if you become incapacitated before death, not paid on death, but before death you become incapacitated, the trustee can manage everything in the trust for your benefit.
Okay.
without any guardianship.
I understand. All right. Thank you for your help.
All right. Thank you.
Very beneficial.
All right. Thank you. All right. You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. And my goal here is just to say here, 52-minute straight run, no commercials, is to help you. And we're pretty much commercial-free. We're here. My goal is just to help as many people as I can. And I'm glad to be here. So let's go to Jay in Bradenton.
Good morning, Joe.
Hey, Jay.
I have a question about an LLC and getting it into a trust.
Okay.
I currently own an LLC, and I'm the only member, therefore the managing member, and it's in my personal name. If I create a trust, do I just change the managing member to the trust? Is that the simplest way to effectively put that LLC?
Yeah, we assign the membership certificate. And I'm not sure you have one, because some people just do the don't have a little corporate book.
Do not have a corporate book.
You do not have a corporate book. So what?
I do not.
Okay. So what we do is we create a new membership certificate in the name of the trust.
Okay.
And then you have two layers. You have your LLC for asset protection, and then you have another layer that it's owned by the trust. So still, if you have a rental property or something in the LLC and there's a lawsuit, they only sue the LLC. They can't get to the rest of the assets in the trust. The benefit of assigning the membership certificate to the trust is that LLC would avoid probate upon death.
Perfect. That's exactly what I want.
All right.
All right. Now, what about if I have a different business that is a sub-S business?
Same thing. You do the corporate share. The
mm-hmm.
stock certificate is assigned to the trust.
All right. Excellent.
And then you still have your two layers of protection.
Perfect. You have helped tremendously this morning.
All right. Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
All right. Let's go to Attorney John Frazier. John is our Medicaid VA attorney. Good morning, John.
Hey, Joe. How you doing today?
You're fresh back from the Florida Bar Conference.
Yep. It was about almost 5 hours each way, and so it was a long day yesterday, but I made it back.
Well, very good. What's new with the Florida Bar concerning VA Medicaid? John, tell us your position with the Florida Bar, because you've gotten some major awards. You're on a committee and so forth.
Yes, I've been the co-chair of the Unlicensed Practice of Law Committee for, I'm guessing, about approaching 10 years now. And I think the biggest accomplishment that we've had on the committee was our committee petitioned the Florida Bar to move forward with what was called an advisory opinion and regarding the unlicensed practice of law with respect to non-attorney Medicaid planners. And in 2015, the Florida Supreme Court actually approved that advisory opinion. So that was certainly the biggest accomplishment that we've had on the committee. But, you know, several other things that we've done also, though.
John, I know you had a planned topic today, but I'm going to change it.
Okay.
All right. So one of the biggest disservices that nursing homes, some, you know, not all, just some, is that they will guide or direct new members, you know, new families. So a family member goes into the nursing home, and the nursing home coordinator, social director, often has recommendations to how to help get this person on Medicaid. And there are some facilities, I'm not going to say all, that would be totally unfair, but there are a few out there, we'll say it that way, there are a few out there, and maybe more than a few, but there are a few out there that will direct families to non-attorneys to do the Medicaid planning. Correct?
Well, I think it does appear, that does appear to be the case, and I think the reason that this has arisen is that Medicaid applications are very difficult. Just a Medicaid application without the legal advice and asset restructuring are time-consuming, difficult, and labor-intensive things to do. And I think the nursing facilities have been trying to outsource just the applications, but the concern arises is when referrals are made to the non-attorneys where legal work is actually needed. For example, I've heard over and over again where a nursing facility would actually refer a client who needs what is called a qualified income trust because the Medicaid applicant's income exceeds the income cap, which this year is $2,313 a month. So it would make no sense whatsoever for an employee of a nursing facility to refer something that can only be done under Florida law by an attorney to a non-attorney. And the response that I've heard over and over again is, oh, well, they work with an attorney. Well, why wasn't the legal work referred to the attorney in the first place? So I think, you know, it's very confusing what's going on, and I don't think we're really 100% clear exactly what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on the one hand, it makes sense to try to outsource just the Medicaid applications, but it certainly appears that in some cases, all of the matters, including legal matters, are being outsourced to non-attorneys. And then
and sometimes the family never has a direct relationship with the attorney. It's all the middleman.
Correct. And actually, there was an attorney who was actually just disbarred over this very issue for his relationship with two separate non-attorney Medicaid blending companies. And I actually brought it up at the meeting yesterday. So the attorneys are really potentially putting themselves at great risk. And the Florida Bar is here to regulate attorneys. The Florida Bar is not here primarily to regulate, you know, non-attorneys. So I think ultimately the attorneys are the ones who are putting themselves at risk.
And I think the facilities themselves, the nursing homes that do this, have some liability in making a recommendation to a non-attorney to do legal work.
Well, I think ultimately their biggest liability, I think as a practical matter, is the failure of the case. So if they refer to a person who's not qualified to do the legal work, and then the Medicaid application or process goes on for 10 months, that facility could be out $100,000, and I've actually heard of cases like that.
All right. Well, for our listeners, John Frazier, Medicaid VA attorney, has handled thousands of cases. It's very important for families to know that they can protect a lot of assets. I mean, if you have assets you think disqualify you for Medicaid, what a good Medicaid attorney will do will reorganize those assets into non-countable categories so you maximize your government benefits and preserve as much of the estate as possible. John, give the audience your contact information if someone needs to talk to you.
The office number is 727-586-3306, extension 104. My cell phone is area code 813-431-3193. And my email address is johnjohn@attypipe.com.
All right, John, you have a great weekend. Thanks for calling.
Okay, you too.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to Attorney Joe Pippin, Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. If you want to call the show, you have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. Let's go to Craig in Sun City Center. Hey, Craig.
I have a question about this regards a trust or a trustee. My sister and I are co-trustees in a couple of trusts, one of which is a special needs trust. And the trust agreement, trust document, says that there should be like two trustees at all times. Now, we currently, we don't have like a third right now.
Craig, your voice is a little garbled. Do you have some way, are you on a speakerphone or something?
Yeah, you want me to go off?
Yeah, go off the speakerphone, please.
Okay. Is this better?
Much, much better. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, we're co-trustees, and we don't have like a third in case something should happen to one of us. So we're probably going to, or we are going to have to go outside the family. So the question that's come up on my mind is there, for another trustee to step in, should I or should we get trustee insurance? And I don't, is there such a thing?
Well, generally, that's not done, and generally, you have someone in as trustee you can trust. I would have to, now, my trust, for example, and I'd have to see your trust to answer the question properly, but my trust say, basically, if all the trustees become, are unable to serve for whatever reason, death, incapacity, just don't want to serve, then the majority of the beneficiaries can appoint another trustee, all without the court being involved. So if your trust said something similar, then the beneficiaries of the trust could appoint some trustworthy person they know. It could be an attorney that is licensed and, you know, is going to do proper things or lose their license. It could be a CPA, accountant, or some other professional person, or just somebody really financially astute that you trust.
Okay. All right. So it's, I mean, do it, if it's going to be someone outside the family and not a professional, at least in those two occupations you mentioned.
Yeah, there is a bond. There is bond you can get. There's bonding you can get for a trustee. So that's
how do you do that?
I could refer you to a bonding company.
Okay.
If you contact me.
That would be helpful.
Yeah, we have an office in Sun City Center. I'm usually there on Wednesdays, and I'd be glad to chat with you a little bit. If you want me to review the trust, I could do that too, but then I could give you the name of the bonding company.
So that's Wednesday you're here in Sun City.
Yeah, Wednesdays. And yeah, I'm in the Pant Financial Building.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. All right, if you have a legal question, we're blasting through the show today. We're about halfway done. If you have a legal question, I'd be more than glad to help you. It's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open at 877-943-9673. Let's go to Mike in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I have a question about automobile accidents. I was involved in two, and I called the police, Jacksonville Sheriff. They came out and just gave me a number and walked away. I mean, should I even call them? I mean, I don't understand this no-fault state.
Well, was there minor damage?
One was $3,000 and one was $500, so, I mean...
I think they have some limit in there. I forget exactly what it is, but if they think there's really minor damage, they just make a report, period, that there was an accident, and get both of your driver's licenses and so and you know so insurance information. But then,
should I even call them?
Call who? The police?
Yes.
Well, I think both parties. On a minor, I'd say on a serious injury or lots more damage than that, you probably definitely should call, and you want that police report's important. And sometimes there's a ticket issued to the person at fault. But if both parties agree, I had a little fender bender one time, and we both agreed not to involve the police. But we both just notified the insurance. I think the minor damage was so minor it was below both of our deductibles. So in my case, I didn't even report it to an insurance company. I just had it fixed. And I'm not sure what they did, of course. But no, you don't have to call the police on an accident.
All right, well, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, you're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. Again, I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. And we're open for another 20 minutes, 22, 23 minutes. And if you have a legal question, you certainly call 877. Phone lines are open, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Be more than glad to help if you have a legal question. Can be just about any area of law, as you can see. We've had questions about landlord-tenant. We've had problems with a bank. Several questions about trust. How do you get LLCs, corporations into a bank? A little Medicaid discussion there. Special needs trust, auto accidents, you name it. We can discuss it and give you some direction, maybe a great answer, and or if not, at least some direction on what to do next. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. So I continue to, offer my free estate planning poster sheet. And what that is, it's an article. I'm looking at my big poster sheet right now. There's an article about what is estate planning. There's an article about the difference between wills and trusts. There's an article about the cost of probate. The larger article is on the three options in estate planning, what your choices are. And there's a article about trust basics with a diagram explaining trust. That's all on one side of the big sheet. On the other side of the big sheet is our website information, little tabs about some of the different articles we've written that you can punch on. One of those is services and fees, by the way. So our fees are an open book, so to speak. You can click right on there and see what we charge for different things. The attorneys are listed. The offices are listed. And most of the radio shows that we do in the different areas of Florida are all listed on the big poster sheet. If you'd like it, I'd love to mail it to you. It's too big for you to try to download on your computer. Wait, you couldn't get it all on one page, and you'd burn a lot of ink, and it'd have to be multiple pages probably. So we'd love to mail it to you at no charge, and all you have to do to get it is one of three things. You can call our toll-free office number, which is 1-800-226-3529, extension 200. That's 1-800-226-3529, extension 200. You can email me at Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. That's Joe at attypip.com. You can text me at 727-667-3967. Let's go to Liz in Jacksonville. Hey, Liz. Liz is gone. All right, Liz, you can call back. You'd be our first caller if you want to call back, and I'd be more than glad to answer your question. Let's go to Willie. Hey, Willie.
All right, Liz, you can call back.
Good morning.
All right, you need to turn your radio off in the background.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've called it. My name is Willie Harris, and I had met you some few years back and got a trust thing out with you.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm calling about now, I have this one lady that I worked for about 25 years, and she had called me to her house a couple of times, and she said she had made a will out to me for, you know, so much money.
Uh-huh.
And she passed last year. And I just found it out. I was doing a lawn for many years. And she said she gonna leave me in something, and you know, that a little in the will. And I haven't heard from the lawyer. She passed. I haven't heard nothing from the lawyer, nothing. It's been 7 or 8 months now. Is there any way that I could see, did she take it out or something that she got down or sick?
What county did she die in?
She died in Pinellas County.
You could go to 315 Court Street in downtown Clearwater.
Uh-huh.
And you could go to the probate department, which is on the first floor.
Go to what? The probate department?
The probate department.
Uh-huh.
And you can view or buy a copy of her will for like $1 a page, or you can view it for no charge.
Okay, what floor that'll be on?
315 Court Street, downtown Clearwater.
I know where that downtown Clearwater.
All right.
Okay, then. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Joe in New York. Joe, are you there?
Hi, Joe. Yes, I'm there. Thank you for taking my call.
You're calling from New York?
Yeah. Well, I listen to you every Saturday, and I am also a resident of St. Augustine. I'm a snowbird.
Okay, great.
My question is, I have a trust, irrevocable trust in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Can I change it back to a revocable trust, or that's not allowed?
No, an irrevocable trust is irrevocable, so you can't change it. Nope.
Okay, you answered my question.
No, you can have two trusts. I mean, you could have, if you have other assets that are not in that trust, you could create a trust in Florida, for example. Do you own a home in Florida?
Yes, I do, and that's in the irrevocable trust, that home.
I see.
And my three kids are the trustees.
And why did you create an irrevocable trust?
To tell you the truth, the lawyer did it. And I was at that time, I was very busy. I had my business going. And now that I sat down and think about it, because I pay all the taxes out of my own money, and there's a substantial amount of money in it.
Yeah, trust income is usually taxed at a higher rate if it's irrevocable, and that's not true. That's not true if it's revocable.
No, it's irrevocable.
Well, okay, so the trust is created by a New York attorney?
Yes.
No, you can sometimes. I don't know the laws in New York, so
right.
So, but you could. I would, if I were you, I would call the New York attorney.
Okay.
And ask them how if there's a way to revoke an irrevocable trust in New York. And if so, how and how much it would cost?
Cost to do it. Okay.
There are ways to change an irrevocable trust in Florida through court modification. And sometimes if all the beneficiaries agree, you can change it. So there might be a way in New York you could change an irrevocable trust, but you really need to call back to the attorney.
Call back to the attorney, yeah. All right, I appreciate you, your help, and keep up the good work. You're very informative.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Joe, right. Take care now. Bye-bye.
All right, have a legal question. We are running out of time on the show, but you have time to call at 877-943-9673. Let's go to David in Jacksonville.
Good morning.
Hey, David.
I have a question on a property, my home, that I received through a warranty deed about 24, 25 years ago. How do I move that into a revocable trust?
Well,
as far as having it registered or recorded.
Okay, so I do this every day, so that's my easiest question today so far. So, all right, so when a person comes in to see me and has a trust or wants me to create a trust for them and they have a homestead, we just do what's called a quit, or any real estate, actually, in Florida, we do what's called a quitclaim deed. So what a quitclaim deed is, it's not a warranty deed, because with a warranty deed, you have a warranty that you have a free and clear title. If you already own the property, then you're not worried about that. So you do what's called a quitclaim deed. So a quitclaim deed is just from David to David, trustee of his trust. Now, your question about recording, we don't necessarily, we can record the deed right away, but most of my clients just hold on to the deed, keep it with their trust papers, and it's recorded upon your death when the successor trustee needs to take over.
Okay. And
so if you die, yes, sir, it's called a quitclaim deed.
Okay.
Right. If you had a trust and you came to see me and you wanted to know what it would cost before you got to the office to do a quitclaim deed of your property to the trust, the fee is $150.
Okay.
And it's a fairly simple, easy thing for us to do.
Sounds good. I really enjoy your show, Joe, so thank you for the service.
Well, thank you. I'm in Jacksonville today, by the way, and I enjoy all my Jacksonville office and clients, and we have multiple offices around Florida, but if I can ever help you, I'll be more than happy to.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. All right, you're listening to Ask an Attorney all about Florida law, and it's 8:39, so that we end at 8:52, so you have a little bit more time to go. At 877 is the toll-free number, 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. I was talking to someone this morning before the show kind of got started. We're talking about the practice area that I have. When I first started in practicing law, I did multiple things. I mean, I did trial work, I did bankruptcies, I did criminal cases, I did DUIs, I did family law. I mean, I did just about everything my first 2 years of practice. And then I was approached with someone to start doing speaking at some seminars and doing some financial planning seminars, and I got to speak about estate planning. So from the time I started that and started getting clients, and I could see how helpful I could be to a family and not as an attorney be involved in the litigation mode. I did family law for a little bit. And, you know, you never have a happy client in a family law case, it seems. Your client's not all that happy. The other side is not happy. You're having to deal with bickering and fighting and the court system, and the court system has delays. And I don't know, it just wasn't my cup of tea. And I would volunteer to help people save their marriage as opposed to getting the divorce. So family law wasn't going to be my career. Although I would still help a family not get divorced if I could. So then I found something that I could have clients, happy clients, get their estate planning done, So I navigated more toward just helping people in my practice as opposed to being involved in fights between people. So basically that's how I evolved into... Now I have other attorneys in my firm. We have a firm, I have a family law attorney, I have a real estate attorney, I have a Medicaid attorney. You talked to a little bit recently, just a few minutes ago on the air. We have other attorneys, but I choose just to stay basically in my office, not go to court, and just help people every day with their estate planning issues, which actually is quite an involved area of law, by the way, where you have to know a lot about real estate, you have to know a lot about taxes, you have to know a lot about all kinds of different assets and how to get all those into the trust. Let's go to Craig in Pinellas. Hey, Craig.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. I was talking to somebody the other day in her 80s, and she was saying that, back in the day, you had to worry about losing your assets when you, I guess, went into a nursing home or got sick.
Mm-hmm.
But with the government insurances now, you don't have to worry about that. And I thought, I don't know. Are there things that you still have to worry about if you're in your 80s? I mean, you qualify for Medicare, I guess.
Yeah, but Medicare doesn't take care of the nursing home expense.
Oh, okay.
And the nursing home expense is $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 a month. And there are ways, earlier, we had our Medicaid attorney on for a few minutes. There are ways to move assets into non-countable categories so you can protect most of the assets. But if you don't do that, you probably have to spend down. And if you have to spend down all of your assets to qualify for Medicaid, you know, your financial assets have to be less than $2,000. There's a way to move money into personal service contracts where it can be used for your care and totally protected and non-countable. And there are other assets like your homestead and assets that we could create that become non-countable to protect assets.
I see. And is there a look-back period on that? Can that be done?
The look-back period that everybody worries about only pertains to gifting. So you can't gift assets away to family members one day and qualify for Medicaid the next. There's a 5-year look-back period.
I see.
But the type of planning that Mr. Fraser does basically is shifting into non-countable categories as opposed to gifting. Gifting would be harmful in you qualifying for Medicaid. Shifting into non-countable categories is not.
Okay, so with the shifting, it could be done 6 months before you...
We have about a 60-day window where we can usually move things around in the 60-day window and still qualify, yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's good. That's good to know. All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Fraser, by the way, takes Medicaid cases all over the state of Florida. Let's go to Maria in Sun City Center.
Hello, Mr. Pepin.
Hello, Maria.
Hi, how are you? I call you a few times. I was having some question, but this is one that bothered me for a long time, and I wanted to call you, and I forgot. I'm very close. I live very close to where your office is. I have a trust. It's in my name. I have one son, and my son has two daughters.
Mm-hmm.
My son is away. He's married. His wife is alive and things like that. Her parents died, and everything went to her and her sister, two sisters. And I'm thinking something for my trust. The way I have the will, when I die, go direct to him, everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, the trust.
Yes.
The trust has all the distribution language. Okay, everything to him.
Yeah, and I my two granddaughter, one is working in New York. She's all girls are graduate in Atlanta, mm-hmm. Not Atlanta.
Yeah, Maria, you're just gonna just ask me a question, please.
Yes, and I wanted to change when I die. I don't know if I can say everything to go to, I have a pretty large investment, you know, and to go to my son, but just in his name.
Not to his wife.
Yes. You got it.
All right. So, yes, you says 100%. I'm sure your document, like most documents, would say 100% to my son, and if he's not living his issue. An issue means children, not...
Her name is not mentioned in my...
No,
my
no, it
will
says...
and everything there.
Yeah, it says...
I wanted to do something to be a language where my son do not change the... he can keep my name and keep the trust with the investments the way they are, and him to...
With all right, Maria, I
give it to my granddaughters.
All right,
to leave it to my granddaughters.
All right.
I don't want it, any money to go to my. Maria,
hold on a second, okay? I'm going to answer your question, then I'm going to move to my next question because I fully fully understand, okay? So basically, what you would have to do to achieve what you want to do is not to give it outright to your son, but give him income and maybe some principal over a long period of time. Then whatever was left when he died would go to your grandchildren. Otherwise,
no, I don't want that.
Okay. Well, you need to just come, make an appointment, and come in because I need to chat with you instead of because this would be this would be too long of a conversation on the radio, Maria. So you need to come in and talk to me.
Yes.
All right.
I prefer to come to you. Even my husband lawyers, they were from Fort Lauderdale. And,
all right. We'll just call and make an appointment. I'd be glad to talk to you.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, let's go to Kim in Tampa. Hey, Kim.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great, and you?
Good, thank you.
We have about a minute or so before I have to end the show, so.
Okay. There was a revocable trust with two parties. Okay, one of the trustees passed away, and so leaving... only one trustee left of a trust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that one that was still surviving, does she have a certain amount of time to change the trust?
Okay, a trustee can't change the trust unless the trustee was also the person who created the trust. So the grantors create the trust, and they usually appoint themselves as the trustee.
Correct.
And then name successor trustees. So was the trustee you're talking about one of the grantors, or were they just a trustee?
The grant trustor.
They were the trustor. They created the trust.
Right.
And they're the trustee. Well, if it's a revocable trust, then they can change it.
They can change it. Does that original trust need to be, the first one need to be revoked? Since there was two parties and now there's one?
No, like a husband and wife, you mean?
Yes.
No, usually like the trust I create, a husband and wife create a joint trust. If one of them died, the survivor can change it. And there's language into the trust that actually says that.
So they can just pull certain things out and just change certain things.
Well, if they were both grantors, it's just like joint ownership with right of survivorship. If they're both grantors and they both appointed themselves trustees and one of them died, the survivor is still the sole owner, sole grantor, sole trustor, sole trustee, and they can do whatever they want to with the assets in that trust.
Okay, so they can just change certain things from that trust.
They can do whatever they want, yeah. They can do whatever they want in that scenario.
Okay, and the second person passes away.
And then the successor trustee named in the document takes over, pays the bills, does the taxes, creditors, and makes the distribution according to whatever they agreed to in the trust. All right, Ken, the music's up. I got to run, but thanks.
Okay, thank you.
All right, if you'd like to contact our office, we have a toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. And Mitch in Riverview, if you want to call me in about 15 or 20 minutes on my cell, the number is 727-667-3967. So long. You have a great, safe, happy weekend. See you next time. Bye-bye.